We're talking with Robert Kruse, author of Mercury Falls and the upcoming Mercury Rises. And Robert, thanks very much for taking the time out today. I want to ask you first about the cover of Mercury Falls. It's one of the things that really caught my eye at the very beginning before I read the book. You've got this angel falling down between buildings, and next to him is a ping pong paddle. And that, to me, really spoke to the tone of what this book was, what I would need to expect out of the book. How did that come about, that cover?
Well, originally I self-published the book, and I used a cover image that I stole from, I believe it's a painting by Raphael, which is these two little cherubim that you see on Christmas ornaments and everywhere all the time. It's sort of one of these overused images, but I didn't know what else to use. And then about a year after I self-published the book, Amazon Encore came to me, which is the new publishing wing of Amazon, and they wanted to republish it. And they asked me if I wanted to have them, re-release the book, and I said sure. And they, one of the things that they do, in addition to doing some copy editing and formatting and of course all the publicity and marketing and everything, they did a nice new cover design, and they were actually pretty cool to work with because they came up with three different cover designs and came back to me and said, so which one do you like? And I picked one of them, which was that angel falling between two buildings, which I thought was kind of striking. And I made some modifications to it, or made some suggestions for modifications. And one of the things that I added was, or I suggested they add, was the ping pong paddle and ping pong ball because, otherwise it looks like a very serious book about this angel falling, but really it's kind of a silly, whimsical romp. And so then the ping pong paddle adds sort of that element to the cover. So it's good to hear that you're saying that struck you because that was kind of the point of that image.
When we first meet Mercury, he's the ping pong plays into that a little bit, and then it kind of goes away. We're taken up in the events of the book. Is the ping pong motif going to be coming back in the second one?
I made a brief mention of ping pong in the second one just because I thought people maybe would expect it, but honestly, it was just something that I threw in that I thought would be funny if you had this angel in the beginning just playing ping pong. And of course, he thinks he's very good at it, and actually, he's very bad. And he's just kind of blissfully unaware of how bad he is, and just having he's having fun playing around, drinking beer, and making Rice Krispie bars, and playing ping pong rather than doing his job, which has something to do with the apocalypse. And I don't know, ping pong was really never a central motif in the book. But it was something that I thought was just sort of an interesting kind of juxtaposition of this angel playing ping pong.
Your background, you're a deacon in your church, and the sense of humor here is rather snarky. I've compared it to Douglas Adams and Spider Robinson, Robert Heinlein. I'm assuming that those authors, among others, were influences in your style, or is this something that you came up with all on your own, just out of your personality?
Well, I've read all those guys to some extent. Douglas Adams was a huge influence. I started reading, I think I read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when I was 14, and then I read the rest of those books, shortly thereafter, as soon as they came out after that. And he really, really struck me more than any other author as just an interesting, I like the way that he wrote, that he didn't spend a lot of time on sort of settings and scenery and kind of setup and stuff. It was a lot of you would take characters and rather than explaining to you like what the spaceship was like that they were on, you would just say, okay, they're on a spaceship, and you didn't really know how they got there or what the spaceship would look like or anything. But these characters would then just be kind of bantering back and forth and mucking around looking for a cup of tea. Which I thought was really interesting because it was the first time I read a book where somebody did that, where that was just kind of like, I don't really care. Nobody really cares about the spaceship. You know what a spaceship looks like. Let's get onto what's really important, which is, there's this kind of mundane dialogue that these characters are having.
So in the second book, Mercury Rises, what's the setup? I mean, how do you top the apocalypse in your first book? I mean, you've got a postponement, if you will, of the destruction of the universe. What comes next?
Well, yeah, that was the question with the sequel. I kind of intentionally left it open for a sequel. I kind of thought that I would do one when I finished the first one because I had more stuff I wanted to do with these characters, especially Mercury, the angel, the main angel in the book. But of course, what do you do after you've had the apocalypse almost happen? The option that you have is to escalate things further. So in the beginning of the second book of Mercury Rises, it turns out that yes, while they sort of postponed the apocalypse, it does say in the first book, you know, it kind of hints that things are still gonna, you know, the apocalypse is still gonna go on. And there's a question in the first book of, you know, who's in charge ultimately of all this stuff, because it doesn't really seem like the angels are supposed to be running things. Really know what they're doing, or how, you know, and everything is kind of going wrong with the apocalypse, and it doesn't happen the way it's supposed to. So the question is, you know, when nobody's really in charge, how do you ultimately stop this thing or get it to go through, if that's what you're interested in? So then the second book, it kind of ratchets up the whole drama a bit, and you start to learn that yes, the angels aren't really necessarily in charge, and there are other kind of more deeper and more sinister powers kind of beyond the angels themselves. And the title Mercury Rises refers to the fact that Mercury is trying to sort of go up through the heavenly bureaucracy and get to the top of things or the bottom of things and figure out what's really going on.
It's an interesting double entendre there, too, because when Mercury rises, that's when the heat's coming up. So it seems like you're actually, you know, adding fuel to the fire with this second book. I understand it's going to go darker, very much like The Empire Strikes Back would have.
Yeah, it's a little bit darker than the first one. I think that, it's a little bit more, I would say, kind of a traditional novel. It's a little bit more tightly structured. Mercury Falls, I had no plan for it going in. I just knew that I wanted to throw in a lot of these kind of just crazy, funny elements. And then I sort of, after I got a ways into the book, I started trying to tie things up and make them make sense. But there's still sort of a chaotic feeling about the book. Mercury Rises takes kind of some of the known elements of the first book and things that weren't quite tied up, and then, you know, it ratchets things up a level, but it also kind of it stays sort of more within kind of a traditional story arc. As things are getting worse and worse on Earth, and things are apparently proceeding toward the apocalypse, things do get a little bit darker. But it's still pretty. It's mostly lighthearted. There's a lot of, you know, as the serious stuff is happening, there's a lot of wisecracks and bad puns and absurdity going on at the same time.
Out of the first book, the surviving characters, of course, all of the angels, I assume, will be back. But out of the surviving mortals, who are we going to see? We're going to see Mercury and Christine and who else?
So Mercury, being an angel, is of course still around, and Christine is coming back because she was a major, you know, probably, you know, the other major main character in the first book. And there's a few other minor characters that were referenced that come back, but those are the two main ones. And then there's kind of in the sidelines behind the scenes, you see a lot of the other angels. You have Lucifer, who's still, you know, trying to destroy the world, and Tiamat, who is Demoness, who is the main bad guy in the first one, who is back, and she's up to her same old tricks. And then there's various other elements of people in heaven, primarily, or angels in heaven, that are trying to get their plans done as they see fit. There's a cast of other kind of stock characters, one of which is this billionaire who's sort of a almost like a James Bond type villain who's got some kind of his own plan for maybe taking over or destroying the world. And then you have a character named whose name is Jacob, who is a he's this FBI blast investigator who is supposed to be determining what happened in the aftermath of what happened in Anaheim, where there was this terrible implosion where this bomb or anti-bomb went off and basically sucked Anaheim Stadium into another universe. And he's trying to figure out sort of a rational explanation for this, and he's trying to make sense of these things, and of course he can't because there isn't really any rational explanation for it. So there's sort of the first book kind of made fun of sort of religious dogma a lot. The second book deals a little bit more with the scientific dogma, that idea that anything, you know, everything can be explained, everything has a rational explanation, and you find out that that doesn't always go according to plan either.
Now, in your first book, there's a lot of religious items, like you say. How much research did you do to figure out what religious elements were going to make it into the book, and how much of it was just, you know, your own background, your own education? You just threw a bunch of stuff in.
It's a lot. It was a lot of throwing stuff in as sort of a whim. I sort of started with this idea that, the idea of the apocalypse and Armageddon that you see in a lot of, you know, popular movies, which is sort of a popularization of a kind of a fundamentalist understanding of the Book of Revelation and the biblical idea of the apocalypse, which, you know, it takes things very, very, very literally and it takes Revelation and other things in the Bible that are, you know, prophetic and about the end of the world, and it takes them as sort of a history, you know, future history of what's going to happen as the world starts to go to hell, which is a very questionable idea to begin with. But I thought I would take all these notions about the apocalypse and sort of implement them in ways that were sort of true to the expectations of people, but also a bit off. So, like, instead of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the four attaché cases of the apocalypse, and there are similar things like that. And there's so much stuff in Revelation and in, you know, in movie, all these bad movies about the end of the world, that you can pull out a lot of these elements in Revelation and make it very much like you're kind of unfolding things with prophecy. But of course, you know, there's so much there that it's easy to make it look like, oh yeah, this is happening just like in Revelation. But the kind of the point is that, you know, you could do that with World War II or any, you know, there's all any number of, and people have, of course, it's, you know, predicted the end of the world based on all kinds of other historical events that they said are, you know, parallel with the Revelation. But of course, you know, none of them really do, and you have to sort of pick and choose to look like that. And that's another one of the points of the book.
You're planning a trilogy, is that right?
That's the plan at this point. I don't know, but I'm definitely going to be at least three books. I don't know whether I'm going to be able to wrap up the whole thing in three, because I left a lot of loose ends kind of in the second one, too, and I'm not positive I'm going to be able to tie them all up in one more book, so it may end up being one of these, you know, like a Douglas Adams thing, where it becomes a bit, you know, increasingly inaccurately named trilogy. But that's the plan right now.
Are all three books going to be done before the world ends in 2012?
The guy that I quote in the beginning of Mercury Falls, Harold Camping, who was actually used to be a minister in my denomination, so I'm really proud of that. He's left to go off and do his crazy stuff. But he says that there's no validity to the idea that the world is going to end in 2012, and that it's in fact going to end on May 21st, 2011. I'm not even going to be able to get the second one out before the world ends, according to him. So,
okay. So, what is the expected street date for the second one? When is that going to come out?
The idea is it's probably going to be, I'm thinking August. I just got the final manuscript over to the publisher, Amazon Encore, like a week ago. So it took them about 6 months, the first one. So I'm predicting that it's going to be end of July, you know, beginning of August.
Okay, well, good luck with it, Robert Cruzy. Thank you very much for your time today. And I'll let you get back to working on the third book in the Mercury trilogy. Looking forward to reading it.